afternoon. What you got?
I got better than that.
I can see your smirk up from over here. What you got?
Just wanted to say happy Halloween.
Oh.
And I'm glad that you dressed up again. Happy Halloween,
happy
Eric.
Halloween.
Thank you.
Today is Halloween. That's true.
Yep.
Are you going out for Halloween?
I got to skate instead.
True.
Yep.
At what age should you stop going out for Halloween?
It's a personal choice.
I agree. I had some kids in yesterday that are the late stages of high school that are like, no, I'm not going. And I had a couple other ones that are like, I'm going for sure.
Yeah.
You only get a few years of it, man.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I feel like I can't go anymore.
I stopped it. It's true. Yeah.
Actually, you know what?
Someone could just say, why don't you just go buy your own?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a grown up. I should be able to do that if I wanted some candy.
Yeah.
Or imagine like opening the door and there I am.
Yeah. What would you dress? Like, if you could dress up as anything right now, what would it be?
Anything?
Yeah. Like if you were going to go.
I don't know. I feel like, okay, so I went to a 2-year-old's birthday party on the weekend. That was a costume party, and I dressed up like Woody from Toy Story.
All right.
Which is like, it's not a good costume. It's like, it's an easy costume.
Okay.
It's like a cowboy. It's like, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
But I would want to do something. If I'm going to do it, I want to do it right. When I was a kid, my best costume ever, I was like 8 or something. I used to play this video game called Legend of Zelda for Nintendo 64. My favorite game. Still my favorite game ever. And I dressed up like the main character from the video game.
Is it a good character?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's like a...
Zelda sounds like he's pretty tough.
Well, Zelda's a girl.
Oh.
His name's Link.
Oh, jeez.
L-I-N-K.
Way off.
Yeah. But he's like this sword slinger.
Yeah.
Beat the bad guys.
Cool.
Could shoot a bow. All this stuff. Ride a horse.
Nice.
Cool guy.
Nice.
So my buddy's dad made the same outfit thing that he would wear. He wore like these robe, like Robin Hood looking kind of guy.
Yeah.
Anyways, so me and my buddy went out as... him,
yeah,
which was the best ever. So cool. Yeah. Thought it was so cool. Great.
Well, I called Dale this morning. I was doing their practice and asked if I could pick up a coffee, and I forgot. Not that like Halloween should be like first thing on my mind, but so I pull up to the window and two girls are dressed up, and it throws me off every time when you go to and see an adult at work, dressed as a cat,
A ladybug
or whatever, or a ladybug, or they're dressed like men. I think like
that's so funny.
Had this thing going on. I'm like, that threw me off.
That's hilarious.
Yeah,
yeah. Good holiday. Would you call it a holiday? Good event. I don't even know. What
they call it a holiday.
Event.
I guess.
Is it a holiday?
No, I don't
it's
know.
Not really.
No.
Nothing's closed. But
no, it's a thing.
Anyhow, we digress.
Yeah.
Okay, so hello again, everyone, members and not members. If you'd like to be a member, I'd like you to be a member.
Yep.
Because then we can do more cool stuff. Maybe come see you. We got some things going on in the background that we're trying to figure out. That would be cool. And you guys are the ones that enable it. So if you're on the fence, you can go to the link that's in the description of this podcast or powertechhockey.ca/memberships. And there's an option there. It's only $10 a month. And then you have the video library, you have consultation calls, etc. that you can do with us, and you help us to grow, which is cool.
Yep.
So in the absence of that, you guys sharing stuff, giving reviews, 5-star ratings and all that is super helpful too. So please do that if it is within your means to do so. Thank you very much.
Hey guys, my name is David. For the last roughly year or so, I've been a member of the PowerTech podcast, and I've trusted Eric and Andy to help me as a hockey dad raising my kids and trying to figure out the answers. I don't have all the answers, and it's a great source of information, and it's an area where I feel comfortable leaning on to help me make better decisions. With that said, one thing I do know about is supplements. I find it's hard to navigate the whole supplement world and make sure that you're using products that work, that are effective, and again, are science research-based. Blue Star Products, incredible brand. Their products are based on research, science, the products work, trademark patent ingredients, and you can find all of the research just by scanning QR codes that are right on the back of the product. Thank you to Eric and Andy for their podcast. I think it's amazing, and definitely give Blue Star Products a try.
Do you have any opening remarks before I get into said topic?
Opening remark is I got sad news today.
Hmm.
My buddy Phil Potra won't be coming to all my games anymore.
Is that fair to say it's official that
he's going to be staying? So for anybody that doesn't know this, or first time hearing. I've talked about the kid before. So one of Charlie's teammates, Matt Patra for Guelph, he was a second round pick to so I could actually go on a tear on this. Second round pick in last year was
22.
Okay, so a year ago in the draft. He was drafted second round to Boston Bruins. And last year he put up, like, so he went and played junior with Guelph again. Had, like, 80 assists. And there was talk in the spring that there's a possibility that he would make the Boston Bruins. And, you know, I was at his dad's house in the summer. I said, hey, there's talk. He goes, there's not a chance, man. He's so far away from making the Boston Bruins. I said, well, I would think so, too. Like, not being rude or, you know, not being supportive. But, to play in the National Hockey League is, it's a big jump, right? And so he's 19 yeah. years old. So he went there at camp and they started talking. And it was, they gave him the 10 game mark where you have to send, if you're a CHL player, the Canadian Hockey League player, you have to send them back to junior or play in the NHL. And this morning got the news that they're keeping him. And this is a big point producer for Guelph. He would have, I think, automatically made the World Junior or Canadian National Junior team and all that stuff. So, I am thrilled to death for the kid, like, of course, and I'm so happy for the family, and I mean it very sincerely. But Phil and I have been texting over the last couple of weeks because we watch the games together. That's Potsy's dad. And we've become very, very, very good friends. Like, I consider him a very close friend of mine. And both him and I, like, of course he wants his kid to go, but he wants to hang out.
Yeah, he wants to hang out.
And I don't have my buddy watching games with me anymore and all that stuff. So we talked about our long, like I said, this is a terrible breakup for me, Phil. He says, no, don't look at it as a breakup. Look at it as like a long distance relationship now. So I said, the only thing I could do to make this better is, you know, my son gets to play in Boston, then we could continue our relationship again. So, but a side note on that. So anyways, I'm thrilled to death for Matt. And I'm, you know, for the Storm, like I'm going to be really interested to see what direction and how George builds the team from here. Cause it's like, that's a big asset, right?
Yeah, so, especially when you're expecting him back.
Yeah. So like I'm genuinely not like, oh, we better have a good team or, you gotta pivot. Yeah. So I like to see like the GM head, how are you going to recoup this? Cause George has been in the business for a long time, right? Or what does he do with it? And, so I'm really interested in that. But the side note of that is, you know, I've talked to, as I know, quite a few scouts and people and stuff. And everybody that I talk to go, did you see it coming? Like, Potsy making the NHL? I said, no. I said, like, I'd be lying if I said, yeah, he's playing the NHL at 19. And to a man, everyone says, I didn't see it either.
When it kind of lined up well, because Boston, they lost Bergeron and Krejci, right?
So it's 100%.
Like, it was like the timing
But still think about that. You think an organization has a lot more depth than that. So I was talking to the one scout and he goes, I'm like a NHL scout, head scout. And he says, you know, like sometimes maybe I give the NHL too much credit. He goes, cause I didn't see it. But my next point is when people say, you know, who's going to make it, you know who's not going to make it. That's proof that you do not have a clue who's going to make it, because he's been criticized for his skating. And to be fair, his first year he got hit a fair amount. He's a tough kid, though. He got hit a fair amount, which maybe even raised some concerns. And his skating style wouldn't be what he's not like. If I take someone on Guelph, for example, doesn't skate like Jake Carabella. Jake's a beautiful skater, right? Like just really nice looking skater. Matt's a little bit more awkward looking and looks like he's got a forward lean and stuff, but just an elite brain on him. And a guy that makes a play, like take the puck, hangs onto the puck, and then you got 2-3 guys around him, then lays a nice pass to somebody, and he's like, wow, where did that come from? So anyways, my point is you don't know who's going to make it. You just don't know. When you think someone is going to make it, like that's why it's head scratchers a lot of the time, right? How did that guy not make it? So like, and I've always said this to kids, like, and you can take this from youth to junior or college, junior college to pro. It's like you could be a really good player at this stage. For example, you might be in midget. You might be a midget or junior. You might be an elite scorer. Okay. And you might do it again in junior. And then you don't see that kid playing the National Hockey League. Why? Because there's more to the game than scoring. And then there's a pro style game and all that stuff. And that's a part that can be very confusing to a lot of people, and obviously confusing, or not confusing, but whatever the word is, even for NHL scouts that draft someone, right? Yeah. So then you look at the draft again, like, so you look at all these things, like ratings just came out, and it's like, okay, so the rate, what does the ratings mean? That's the central scouting. So what does that mean? It's mean, well, they're hired by the NHL or within the NHL to put a list together of who they feel are the best players. That would be A, B, C, D, or round 1 to 7. And it's like, okay, but how, like, so the first ratings come out, like, how do you come out with, after 8 games in junior hockey and maybe 4 games in college, to come out with actual ratings? It's like, come on, like, you can't. You go on maybe your first look, but you can't see someone enough to say that's a first round pick or a 7th.
And people jump all over that.
Yeah. Too, so, right? So the ratings. Yeah. So my point to this now too is, like, where people get confused is, how did he get, like, when they see these ratings that come out, and then a kid gets drafted that was supposed to be in the first round, goes in the 4th or the 6th or something like that. It's like, how could that be? How did he slip? Well, the difference now is because you have an organization saying, okay, here we feel are the best players. But if you are the Dallas Stars, you like who you like, and the ratings doesn't matter. So, and also know that some teams don't even use the ratings. They might check in a guide or something, but they have their own list. They don't even bother with it. So it's all that stuff, eh? You never know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, congrats to Maddie, because that's cool.
Yeah,
good save.
Almost spilled it.
Yeah, congrats to him, man. That's freaking awesome. And congratulations to all those guys that were even rated too, because that's an exciting thing for some of those guys. We had a couple. I got another guy from Leamington, maybe two, from the Flyers that we work with closely. We're on that list. Chooch was on the list. A couple of guys that we train around that list, which is cool. So good for them. That's exciting. So on the thread of Maddie getting knocked for his skating, I'm going to keep that, because that kind of transitions into my next story. So the topic that I want to talk about today was the idea of, like, overcoaching, or what's the best way to get kids to respond to your coaching, whichever kind of way, those are kind of tied together nicely. And my inspiration for the topic today was, I had a team in here on Sunday that was doing some skating. I had them on the treadmill, and it was a younger team. I think they were U13, I want to say, so younger. And it was a AA team that locally from around here. So they're on the treadmill, and one kid in particular was struggling a bit more, like, obviously struggling more than the rest of the group. So I can have, like, 5 kids on the treadmill at a time, like, on a rotation. So of the 5, he was, like, obviously struggling to pick it up more than the rest of the group. And I said to all of them at the start, like, it normally takes 2 or 3 shifts for you to figure it out. So just, like, be patient, figure it out for 2 or 3 shifts, and then you'll be fine. So I had this kid come on, and the other kids had all just, like, they just happened to kind of pick it up a little bit quicker than him. So he comes on, and he's having a hard time grasping it. And I can start to see the frustration leak in. Like, he's getting a little bit upset that obviously he can feel the pressure of, like, the other kids got it faster than him, and he's struggling a little bit. But it's still, like, his first shift that he stepped on the treadmill.
So you're talking within 2 minutes.
Right. So of this group, I said normally it takes 2 or 3 shifts. Most of them just, like, happened to pick it up a little bit quicker than normal. So this kid, who it seemed like he was struggling more than everyone else, was actually just, like, right in line with what normally happens anyways. So he just happened to be with a cohort that picked it up a little bit quicker.
Yeah, so let me interrupt you for a second. So, like, for people that don't know what a skating treadmill is, and then there's going to be people that say that skating treadmills are stupid, and some people say, no, they're the best. That's not the point. Right. It's a device that is actually very good, especially if you want to look at your mechanics, right? If you want to do it for conditioning, there's other ways to do it, but you can look at your skating mechanics. It's very helpful. So anyways, how a skating treadmill is, just for so people know, it's a treadmill. So, you know, the track runs, so it's pushing against you, and you're skating on it like you would in a normal stride on a hockey. So that's the bottom line. So a lot of people that have seen it for the first time go, oh, so you actually wear your skates. Yeah, it's called a skating treadmill. So the what would be hard about that? So, like, if you look at going on a running treadmill, seems pretty simple, right? Although it's a little different feel. Like, and that's the thing. It's a little different feel. So when you get on a skating treadmill, it's the same thing. It's a little different feel. You have to be really good at gliding. but for me is I think sometimes some of the kids have could in a not a weird way, but in a sense could be like going on a carnival ride, feeling like I'm going to fall. Is this dangerous? And that could be the block right there, right? So I just wanted to say that.
Yeah.
So people might.
No, that's good. That's good context, because that's actually the most important piece of why it can be a struggle. Because it's just like if you run on a running treadmill, it's like the mechanics are the same as running, but the floor moves instead of you. And then vice versa, or same thing for skating. It's like you skate the same way.
It's an inverse relationship.
It is an inverse. Nice. So anyways, so this kid, for exactly those reasons, he's a little bit overwhelmed by the machine just in general. And he's having a hard time grasping like that the ground is moving instead of it being stationary, right? So, but he was right in line with like the normal curve of what typically happens when a kid goes on for the first time. He just, again, like I said, happened to be with a group that picked it up a little bit quicker. So anyways, me knowing this, because I've been doing this for a long time, there's not much to say to him, right? It's not like, no, do this. No, fix your feet. No, grab this. No, make your head. If there's not coaching to be done right now. It's just let the kid feel the stimulus. Let him deal with all the new things that are going on, because it actually doesn't have much to do with the skating. It's just like the treadmill's loud. The stimulus is different. There's people watching. There's all these like mental things that are going on that he's just trying to grasp before he can even think about, I need to work on my skating. That's the point of this tool, right? So for the first 2-3 shifts that kids are using the treadmill, I don't really say a whole lot. I'm not correcting things a lot. I'm not saying a whole lot, because I'm just letting them feel it. Like, just get used to it for a couple shifts, man. It's not like right away jump on and let's start correcting everything. So as soon as the kid gets off from his first shift, I could see like he looked like he could have like borderline been crying. Like, oh, he was almost like on the brink. So I was just saying to him, I'm like, hey man, like don't get frustrated. It's all good. Takes a couple shifts, you're gonna be fine. And left it at that. He gets off. But I can see he's like looking at his mom. He's like a little bit frustrated, whatever. So like the second this kid walks off the treadmill, the coach comes over and is like trying to help him. And then that coach walks away and his buddies that are on the treadmill are like trying to give him feedback on like what to do, because they picked it up faster. Then the assistant coaches came over and are like trying to. So I had to say to all of them, the coaches, the player, whatever, I was like, guys, just like get out of his face. He just needs a minute to figure it out. Like, leave him alone. Right. Sure enough, hops on for his second shift. And by the end of his second shift, he's skating normal, just like everybody else. Right. So what happened was the people that were in positions of being coaches felt they needed to like try to jump in and help this kid. And a lot of times that is what you want to be doing as a coach, but sometimes the less is more approach as a coach is actually what's more effective. And so for this situation where this kid is just a little bit overwhelmed by stimulus, he doesn't need like more attention. He doesn't need more help. He doesn't need more guidance. He just needs a minute to figure it out. He needs a little bit of autonomy to just figure it out for a minute, right? So that was my inspiration for kind of the topic today of like, what is overcoaching, first of all, and like how it can manifest when you're in that position, being a coach or even being a parent, because overparenting is the same kind of thing. And then kind of like on the flip side of that is like, what are the best ways to get kids to respond? What are the kind of things you want to be looking for on when to talk to them more, when to back off, and those types of things? Because it's not very clear. Like, there's a lot of gray in that area. And I think with experience, you start to learn how to judge a little bit better. And you know, it's funny because I was thinking about this episode before we started it, and I was like, I'm like thinking about ways I want to ask you the question. But while I'm asking these questions, I'm kind of thinking, I'm like, I've kind of been doing this for a long time. So like, I can kind of like gauge it as well. So that was just a very clear example to me of where it's like, you're actually making this worse by trying to be helpful. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
That's totally makes sense.
Yeah. So maybe you, we can start on that and like any like response or comments to that, and then we'll kind of get into it from there.
Yeah. So I've always said this with you know, people that like when you take a young hockey player, and I'm talking my grandkids, like there's talk about getting them on the ice. So I remember my kids. When they first started skating, it was like, oh, I want to skate. Then you got on the ice and you put them on the ice. It's like, pick me up. So right there, you could start going, yeah, but it's okay. It's the, no, they're there. That's step number one. And if they touch the ice and one up, that's step number one, man. And then over, it might take more than one or two times where they, or they, like for my kid, it was when he saw one of his older buddies skate, it was like, okay, I'm doing that because I don't like being a little wiener, right? So he just decided to, I'm going to take off now, hold his hands. And then it was, you know, there's a trigger that will make someone want to learn a little bit more, right? So, but so same with another example I use is, with especially with younger younger kids with parents, and I'm not saying real young, I'm just saying in general, sometimes the parents or coaches or anyone can get too excited or too
overzealous.
That's exactly what I was going to say about getting results through practice and coaching. So that's why a lot of the times you'll see someone come in at 7, 6, 8 years old, and they're asking for shooting lessons. And I just look and I go, don't do that. Don't do that. Because so what I always recommend, right, is shoot a lot of pucks. Yeah, but he doesn't know how. Well, that, I know. But by shooting a whole bunch of pucks, he's going to start to learn how. Because having a 29-year-old guy or a 55-year-old guy or whatever that's bigger than them that could shoot a puck or whatever, and start saying, okay, when they grab the puck before they shoot or when they shoot, you start making corrections and tell them 5 different things. As good as that might sound, they cannot process it. They just need to shoot the puck. You know, when you shoot 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 pucks, there's some self-correction that gets made. Or not, but it doesn't even matter. Once you know what it feels like to have a puck on your stick, I'm talking young, not when you're 30, right? But when you're young, to get the reps in, to just get your body going, then all of a sudden you can start making corrections, right? So it's almost like the analogy of pushing a parked car, right? So that's what I would say, like when someone wants, you know, they got to be faster, like they're young, or the skating mechanics, either. It's like you got to just let them do things for a while, right? And then you can encourage and nudge a little bit here and there. Or maybe sneak in a drill, like, let's go back to skating. I don't know if I'm all over the place. Like, if a kid is skating and you want, and they're like 8, 10 years old, they say their turns are not great. You know, typically, what a young guy turns, let's say we're turning right, so they're trying to do a tight turn, a lot of the times that back leg will drag because they feel comfortable like doing that. They don't trust that front leg being in front and in the edges. So instead of going through all the verbiage of how to do it and show them demos and stuff like that, they just can't do it yet. So there's other ways to do it without telling them. So it's like one could just be doing, you know, like I'm just throwing it out here, 5 cones up the ice and you're turning around cones the whole time. Eventually that leg starts to land. And if it doesn't, it's okay. So an alternative could be like, let's not work on turning. Let's work on you teaching a outside edge stop, like a V, right? And it doesn't have to be like with speed. It's just learning how to use that edge and or things like that, so they can just kind of put two and two together.
Yeah. So like it's kind of, sorry, are you done?
I can be.
Okay. So just on that same thread, because I find in line with this kind of conversation, especially when they're younger, which is so interesting to me, parents have a really hard time accepting that less is more. You know, I cannot tell you how many conversations I've had with parents, and you probably more than me, like they just have a hard time believing you that less is more. So one example, I remember my godson when he started skating, and he's like not a serious hockey player. Like he plays house league. He likes to play. It's fun, whatever. So when he started skating, he was doing this thing where he was dragging his left foot. So his one foot would push and he would like C cut with his left foot and then drag it. Like he wouldn't pick it up. And I remember saying, because my cousin was asking me, like, does he need to like work on it? Like, what? I was like, yeah, he needs to work on it. But like, what does work on it mean? You know? And I've had many people come to me with that same issue. Like my kid drags their foot or like they're not picking both feet. And it's like, they want me to like correct it. And you can try, but they just need to do reps, and it a lot of times it works itself out. Like, I don't know any 18-year-old kid that plays at any level that drags a foot when they skate. Like, I don't know any, right? Because they figured it out. Even if they're house league, like, they all figured it out. If they never took a skating lesson, every single, you watch any house league level game for the, like, juvenile age, when they're U20, you watch any hockey game, they all pick their feet up when they skate, right? So they figured it out. They didn't just like have this perpetual dragging foot because they didn't have a coach, you know? So
yeah, at some point they can turn and stop and all that stuff.
And is it the most elegant and beautiful? No, but to more or less kids can figure things out, and then you can start to your point, they have a little bit of foundation, then you can start to point things out. But even yesterday I had 9-year, 8-year olds on the treadmill yesterday. I had 3 of them, and they just want to go fast and have fun, man. So I'm trying to, you want to throw them a teaching point, but then leave it alone. So I'll say to them, hey, like, you guys hear that I keep saying long strides? And they go, yeah. It's like, okay, why do you think I'm saying that? And then we talk about it for 37 seconds and then move on. Let them, and then they just go, can we go fast? Right? Because that's it. So I gave them the teaching point. Maybe it'll marinate, maybe it won't. And then we move on. And then we'll revisit it. Let them do it for a bit. And that's kind of the strategy. But parents have a hard time with that because I notice the treadmill is a great example because I get to see things in isolation because there's so few kids. So I'll have a kid go on and I'm just letting them like figure it out. And then they'll walk around and dad will come running over and like try to show them the arm swing or try to show them like they need to be lower or something. And it's like, guys, just let them do it, man. Just let them figure it out, you know?
So yeah. You said something interesting that I just put a little note that I wanted to touch on today. So I'll touch it now. But before I do that, I always want to like to make that example of when we talk about overcoaching, it's information overload, right? So like, I'd like everybody to think about when you get really excited about, you know, we're going to make progress here, we're going to get ahead of the game, which sometimes you can. It's the simple steps that matter. So if you can just think about, like for me, a musical instrument is, that's you might as well say, invent the rocket, Andy. Yeah. Right. So I want you to picture what is it that you're not good at or have very little experience in? So for me, it would be a musical instrument. You throw a guitar in my hand or a French horn, right?
A spoon.
Not in my hand. Yeah, whatever. It's like, it doesn't even make sense to me. So let's just say we're going to learn how to play. What's a simple song on the guitar? I don't know.
Whatever. Hot Cross Buns.
Okay, we're gonna start with that, right? So for me, I'll be lucky if I have the guitar in the right spot. My big old monkey hands will be like, this doesn't, like, I'm already negative, right? So I'll try, and it's like, it doesn't make sense. So for you to say, if, as I do my first two chords, are they called chords?
Note or chords,
I know.
Yeah.
It's going to be awkward. So if you say, okay, hold your pick differently. Okay, I'll do that. Okay, now the left hand's got to be this. Okay, you got to turn your wrist. This. The more information you give me, the more I'm pissed. Or the more I think I'm stupid. Or the more I think that I like, guys, right? But, which I've done because we got Charlie a guitar, is if I try pissing around, grabbing a guitar, and just playing around with, they're not notes, by the way, but whatever. It's like all I'm doing is going, well, if I press here, that sound, if I do this, if I hit all 6 strings, that's neat. Like, so if I was actually interested, I could probably spend time and then I could ask or go, you know, I could just play around with it. Of course, music you probably don't learn by yourself, but it.
You did, I did.
Right, but yeah. I don't think the teacher's just like beating the shit out of you on it, right? So that's, if you take that to hockey, it's, there's so many things going on. You have the brain, you got the body, you got the feet, you got the stick. That's a lot of stuff going on. The ice, the atmosphere. So the more you say, the probably the less effective you are. So that's why I say when you're doing things, especially as a beginner, is, and this is why I say, like, anybody can really do a youth hockey clinic or practice. Because it's just repetitions of anything. It doesn't have to be perfect because those reps you'll get better as you go. So that's that. So the point
there. Because the only thing I want to add to that too is, like, you're explaining as a parent, like, if as a grown up, if you don't know how to do something, think of that experience, whatever. And in your head, you have the developed brain enough to process the fact that instruction will help me. I need to fight through it to get better. Practicing makes me better. Like, you already know all those things. Whereas like a little kid doesn't know those things, right? They don't have a good concept of like, the more I practice, the better I get. Like, you might have told them that and they could say it back to you, but they don't really understand like the idea of this will help and I need to focus on what you're saying to get better, and my actions today will make me better tomorrow. Like, they don't know, they can't conceptualize those things like an adult. So as frustrating as that would be for you as an adult, understanding that if I do these things, I will get better eventually, like scale that down now to a kid where it's like, not only is it information overload, they don't even understand that you're trying to help and this could make me better. And they don't even know those concepts yet. So they're just like, can I just like skate around? Like, can I just push the puck? Like, whatever, right? So I just wanted to throw that in on top of that.
Yeah, so if you got a guitar, it might be your first lesson. Let's say you need lessons to play guitar, is that you learn how to play one note. And the teacher might say, yeah, okay, that's good. Could be better. Do this. Okay, try that. Do five of those. I don't know. And then you have a little bit of success. Okay, there's one. And then those a whole bunch of successes make a bunch of makes a bigger success. But I use this example because I've coached a lot, but then I used it, this concept with my kids, is especially my wife, because she doesn't get anything. Is there's three things that will get someone that makes them coachable. Okay. So one is like this, I mean, more like as a coach or a parent being aware of these things.
Sorry, let me just clarify.
Yeah.
You're saying as the coach, there's three things that
you should recognize
in a kid?
In a kid when you're teaching.
Okay.
Not even a kid, when you're teaching.
Okay.
Like, you could be a manager of a sales department.
Okay, sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I always think there's three things. One is, if you're teaching someone, do they, like, they may not have the ability, right? So that's one thing. If they have the ability, okay, that's good. Number two, they just don't understand what you're saying, or they just don't get it. So let's say, use it from the hockey perspective, is they just don't have the I just can't do, or I can't figure that out. I don't know what you mean, right? And desire would be in there as well. No, that's the next one, would be desire. So you could be dealing with someone that doesn't even care to get better or to learn.
So sorry, say the three things again.
Ability.
Yeah.
The ability to understand, like, mm-hmm. and understanding a concept.
So having like the physical ability, number
right.
one. Having the ability to understand, number two.
Yes.
And then do they even want
the ability to want it?
Yeah, right.
The desire.
Yeah.
So you deal with that a lot. So I use an example of me. Not as a hockey player, but as when I got stepped out of the hockey world, I went into a sales role with a big company. Okay. Everybody, you've got, oh man, you're going to be good at this. You can talk to anybody. Okay. The next part is I didn't really, so this is neat. The next part is that I didn't really understand the process of what we were doing. I just wanted to make the money. And so I didn't really understand. I knew what I could have had. There was huge money to be made. But so basically the bottom line is I was mid-20s, dumb, just wanted to get out there. You had a stack of leases. I could go walk into your office and just, if I understood how the leasing worked, I could walk in and say, Eric, same product or a better product, it'll cost you, bottom line was that it cost you the same or less. You would get a new thing, make no difference in your life, I would make money. But I didn't understand the process of the leasing. Could I have figured out the leasing and how to really do this if I was really engaged? Of course I could. I'm not an idiot. I'm actually a fairly intelligent dude. Look at my glasses.
Nice.
Right?
You can tell by the glasses.
Yeah, you can tell by the glasses. So what it comes down to is that I didn't really care about that field. I was more pissy at that time in my life that I wasn't in my hockey world. So it was like, I wanted to happen.
So you think you had the ability, like you had it within you. You could have done it. You could have done a good job. Like,
well,
from the skill set perspective, you had it, which I would
agree.
Can
I pick up a phone and call someone? Yes. Can I walk into an office and basically make conversation? Yes. Did I want to do well? Yeah. But I didn't have, so my, I think my first flaw in that was I didn't have the real burning desire to learn. I didn't care enough about being really successful in that business. So I didn't care enough to actually figure it out. So when you're talking to a player, and this is where I've dealt with this so many times as a coach, is, okay, Eric, you have the ability. Okay, I can see that. So if I show you, or if we talk about something, I might not have to correct you. So I don't really have to spend a lot of time. Or I see a tweak that I need to make and I can, right? So I see the tweak. You have the ability to do it. Okay, now you just don't understand what I'm saying. So let's just say it's a, not a hockey concept. Let's just say it's a shooting. I could tell that, okay, so let's say in shooting that when you're shooting a puck, your puck comes past your heels and it's telegraphed. Okay. So I'm doing my best to tell you. So don't understand. It could be from two reasons. One, you don't get what I'm talking about. But number two, it could be I'm not explaining it well enough to you. So there could be a huge frustration because I'm trying to tell you, man, like just do this. But the words and the way I'm presenting it to you doesn't jive. Right. So that's that could be the coach's fault, or it could be like you just can't grasp it. So it goes both sides. So from a coach, the ability to have good coaching cues and to be clear, concise, is huge because sometimes a kid will never get it. Like, so a lot of times, like where you talk about overcoaching, could be that you put a four paragraph sentence together when it could be toes to the net, hands in front of you, right? Push down on the stick. Instead of using all these fancy terms. So, because a lot of times you use all these big words, fancy terms, long sentences and stuff like that, and it looks like you know what you're talking about, but sometimes that's just a facade for not knowing what you're talking about to sound good. Yeah, facade.
Facade
means like something.
It's a good word.
Right? Or disguise.
Yeah.
And it's not your language. So that's on me now, right? Because you could be trying. So...
Okay, so like, can I sharpen those up?
Sure.
And then the last part is
like, you have to care enough. So I can, like, let me stick on the second one. Don't get it. I, as a coach, as a parent or whatever, have to have the ability to reach everybody, like to you. Like, I have to be able to make sure that I'm on point to give the information, because if I don't, now I'm just a frustrating human. Does that make sense? And the last piece to that would be when you're working with a player or a player working with a coach and there's someone that doesn't care at the same level, that's a whole different thing. So now you could be like, as a coach, if I'm working with someone that just doesn't care. So like back to my sales world, the manager could have sat there every day and told me how great I was, how much ability I have. And if you do this, 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 it's like, yeah, but I don't care. Not that I don't care, but I don't care enough. I don't care enough. So I, as a coach now, if I'm going against someone that just doesn't care enough, you're trying to chop a redwood tree down with a ball peen hammer. What a piece of frustration this is. So at that point, you have to say, here's the information, take it, and now it's on you, right? So that could be system, skill, you know, because a lot of people are pretenders too. They want to be there just to be there. They want to do enough to stay around. They, you know, when you ask a guy if they're a team guy, are they really a team guy? Will they do anything for a team, or will they do the things for themselves? So it's like, that's a long sentence I just said.
No, that's good. I want to just like touch it quick just to make sure I get what you're saying. So first thing I want to touch on before I do that is the whole idea of like, you can't make kids want it. Like, you can't make them want to know or want to be better or whatever. And that's been such a learning, just for me personally, that has been just such a learning process. And like, you say this to me all the time, right? Where it's like, I've come to you in the office and be like, man, like I'm feeling a little frustrated, or like I'm disappointed, or I feel like I should still give this an extra thing. And you'll say to me, you'll just be like I'm telling you this, like, don't get your hopes up. Like, don't think like your level of care, almost like there's a little bit of naivete. To me,
we're going French.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry, we're switching to French here.
Français.
Naivete.
I know. So maybe there's like a little bit of me being naive because I'm still early in like the coaching journey.
Well, okay, I'm going to say yes, that's very true. But the other thing is that, which is a credit to you, is you love it. Yes. And you want to see the best for that person, but that's the frustrating
part. That's exactly what I mean, yeah. Right? So as a coach, I'm sitting here like, wow, I really care. Wow, I really want to help you. Wow.
And it's wow, like, you can be great.
And it's like, I feel like I can make you reach that. I can make you get it. I can make you have the light bulb go off. And I feel like with some kids, maybe that push can help. But to your exact point is like some kids, they just don't have it, man. And that's one thing like that I've come to grips with probably in the last few years, now that I've been doing this for a long time. It's like in the last few years now, I'm just like, I'm doing my best as the coach to the level that the kid is presenting to me. And it's like that, the more you care, the more I care. It's like, that's kind of the scale now, right? So kind of to your three things point, it's like, so there's the ability that the kid has, like physically, what are they actually capable of producing? So if we take like from a skill perspective, it's like, I'm trying to show them the shot. Could they eventually figure this out? Like, do they have it within them to get it? That's number one. Then number two is like, can they comprehend my corrections? Can they actually take it? And to your point, that could either be, if they're not, it could be a mistake by you. Like your communication style is not there. Or it could just be like, they don't have the depth. They don't have the ability to go deep enough to grasp what you're saying. So it could be either of those things, right? Because you could try explaining it 100 different ways and they just cannot figure it out. And that happens. And then the last part is that desire part. It's like you could, maybe they have the ability, maybe they could comprehend it if they wanted to, like you in the sales job. But at the end of the day, it's like, I just don't care, you know?
You're playing pool with a rope.
Yeah, right.
Good luck.
Yeah.
You're not sinking one ball.
So I guess my point, I guess from that you brought up is kind of like from the overcoaching standpoint or how to get the kids to respond, it's like coaching to what is being presented. You have to be able to do that. And that's why it's important that we've talked about this so many times, like being flexible, having different coaching styles, having different communication styles, and just being able to work whoever it is that you're with to give them something. Because every kid, no matter how unreachable, no matter how much they don't care, there's something you could give them on their level. And then it's up to them, right? Because again, like I said, you cannot make them want it. So you could do the best you can as a coach, and then they have to decide whether or not they want to be on top of it or get better from it or actually take the information. So does that kind of make sense?
Like, it totally
summarizing
makes sense.
What you're
yeah.
saying?
Yeah. And then another way that you can tell if someone, you know, the give a shit meter is that a lot of the times, from my experience, a kid that is truly invested in the game, in the development, and getting better and all that stuff is when there's feedback from them. Feedback could be in the form of a question, could be in the form of a pushback. Like I remember with Charlie, I was, after his first year, I was doing some stuff with a shooting and he said, and I said, okay, do this. He goes, yeah, but Dad, I'm feeling this more. That's I'm interested. Now he wasn't negative. And I said, okay, tell me about it. He goes, and he explained his thoughts. I said, okay. And then we had a conversation about it. It wasn't a conversation like I'm right, you're wrong, or he's right, I'm wrong. We had a conversation about a little tiny thing with shooting, right? Or the next thing is like questions. And then the last thing on that is that they're going to actually take that information, apply it, practice it. So if you see someone, like if you're working in on the ice and you say, hey, start working on this, they should immediately put that into practice. Or if you see a gap in their game, the ability to practice it or the desire to practice it is a big indicator. So questions or feedback and practicing some reps to make it better is a very, very big indicator. If you talk to someone about, hey, move your feet, and they go, okay. Like when you're getting the puck out of the corner, move your feet, got to separate yourself. They nod at you. And they do nothing about it, and they don't ask a question, or I didn't, what do you mean, or I thought I did, or, you know, or that you see them apply it. They're probably going in one ear with the other.
Right.
You're talking to someone with the eyes of a chicken.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of like how the overcoaching thing looks, maybe like some signs about it, whatever. And then I want to go like, maybe at the end we could do some examples of like the kid that doesn't care, how to coach to that, the kid that really cares, how to different ages, that kind of thing. So I'm going to list these. I'm just going to say each of the headings. And then if there's any thoughts you have, you can interrupt me or you can talk about it when I'm done. So kind of the first thing is like the negative Well, actually, maybe we'll go out of order. So, like, signs that you could be overcoaching. Okay. So, signs of like it manifesting itself. These are things like you can look for as a coach as signs that you are overcoaching the situation, or maybe you're not doing the best job necessarily. Okay. So, I'm going to list them and then you can interrupt or talk about after. So, first one would be like you're constantly having to criticize a kid or kids. So, if there's like a kid that you're constantly having to like push their buttons or you're constantly having to say something to, one way you could think about that as a coach is like, this kid is a pain in my ass, which could be the case. But another thing could be like, you're it's too much. You're doing too much on this kid, right? Which you're getting a backlash for it kind of thing, right? So, that's one. Another thing could be like excessive training. Like you're spending, you're making them do extra skates, you're making them do extra practices, you're making them do extra workout, pregame this, like all too much stuff. That could be another indicator. That's a good one. When the kids are not having fun, or they don't seem like they're having fun, and you can simply ask them, right? You can simply ask them if you guys had fun. If you do, like we do at the end of all of our camps, it's like we bring them in and they're like more instruction-based camps. And the kids will come in, like, do you guys have fun? That's question one. And some kids will just say yes because that's what you say, right? But you can have a follow-up. Like, what was fun about it? What did you like? What was your favorite part? Like, these kind of things, right? There's your thing, right? If kids are, like, just tired, like, physically, emotionally, whatever, that's another one. Kids are getting hurt. That kind of goes in with the excessive training. If you have a high dropout or turnover rate,
that's a huge indicator.
That's a huge indicator, man, yeah. Right? If people want to leave, that's not a good thing. If you got a bunch of kids that are always crying or frustrated, right? That could be another indicator. Parents are expressing concern. If their performance is declining in some way, like over the year, you're seeing that they're actually getting worse, not better. Kids are complaining or parents are complaining that kids don't have confidence. If you feel like you always have to be there for things to run well, that's another one where there's just like no autonomy with the group. Kids are scared of making mistakes. And then obviously if like kids are expressing some kind of mental health issue because of you. So these are, again, it doesn't mean that you're 100% overcoaching or not doing a good job or whatever. Cause sometimes kids just have issues, man. Like that just happens. But those are kind of a few things I thought of at least that you can look at or you can think of, like, am I seeing that with my group? Am I seeing that with my team? How are these things manifesting? Because there's to some degree, like you're going to have a kid that cries. It's like, okay, was that you or was it them? Like, it's good to ask the question, right? So just running through that list, that's something you guys can check to see whether or not you're doing it. So one for your question for you, any thoughts on that? Number one in general. And then two, maybe you could just talk about in general, how to find the balance between that urge to constantly correct or constantly coach versus backing off and kind of letting them do their thing. So those are, I guess, two things you can kind of go with.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think you have to know like what you know and know what you don't know. Number one, that's a really important thing because you can get caught talking in a big circle if you talk about what you don't know. So when you talk about what you know, it's the key is to be clear and concise. You have to understand that anybody doesn't want to hear, I would say pretty much anybody, I got to say the sentence better. I think this applies to just about anybody. You can only hear someone's voice for so long before it becomes annoying. Even the positive guy that walks in and how you doing? Super good and getting better.
Yeah.
Okay, relax, man. Like, good for you.
Yeah.
And then it's never nonstop, you know, like, and then, but especially the super negative guy that's just beating the snot out of you every day, like telling you how shitty you are or, and I'm not even saying shitty, but like it's constantly in the correction mode. Like a person can only take so much of one person. That's why it's very refreshing for my buddy Dale, the coaches at Leamington Flyers, that I come out and help him in skills days. And I jump on the odd practice right now because he's actually more experienced at the game of hockey, was drafted, played pro, all that shit. And he's a very intelligent hockey guy. I have a nice resume on my own, but it's not because I'm so much better at being skills coaching and all that stuff of putting things that help them in the game is good, but I just bring a different approach. So it's a different voice, a fresh voice that's not barking at them all the time. right? So that's refreshing. So always understand that if you, the more that you talk, the less that they're going to hear. Less is more. More is less, whatever it is. So the key is keeping things clear and concise and say what's important. So what happens a lot of times when people coach or teach or whatever, for the first time, like your desire to make everything work is, it's, that's a good thing. But when you overload people, it's that then, because what you're basically saying to them, this is not happening fast enough and things take time, right? Yeah. So for example, if you're a coach that, well, here's my philosophy when I do something, just my philosophy. I had someone ask me one day, how did you get results out of the kids so fast? I said, well, first of all, I showed the drill, right? Like, so it was, if it was a skill drill that I used to have the ability to do, which I do it at a slower pace now, but let's just say it is, here's what I want you to do. It's going to look like this. So it's, you know, da, 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 shoot, whatever, right? There it is. Go ahead. And I might give one or two pointers, right? Weight transfer here. Make sure you're moving your feet. Keep your head up. Let's say it's those three things. Great. Do the drill. So I already know that they're going to fail or it's not going to be perfect. I already know that. So do I go all the details of what's going to go wrong? Don't do this. Don't do this. No. Here's the thing. Here's three things that I want you to focus on. So I know they're going to do it. So show them. Next thing is point out one or two things to correct, like in a group. And then if you have time, if you see some really big time things, then you go and individually coach, right? So show, correct, and you keep continuing on that until it becomes better. Does it happen in 5 minutes? Sometimes. Sometimes it takes 4 months, right? But I think that's really important. So now if you break down every little thing, every little time, like you got to be able to show some success. So let's just say in that first drill that we were doing that they did one out of two out of three things properly. Do you harp on the two things right away? How about praising the good thing? How about, hey, your feet were really moving.
Yes,
good job.
Yes, set it up. Yeah.
Fantastic. Your feet are moving. Now a kid goes, oh, okay, good. And you don't have to hammer them right away with, but you did these two shit things, right? Good job moving your feet. That's success. Like praise success. Now they do that a couple of times. Okay, we're right. Here's the positive. Like I'm not trying to be Joe positive, but it's just, it seems to work. Like now they feel like they're doing something well. Okay, now let's, you know what? Your feet are moving really well. Let's try to get that head up so you can scan the ice. Here's your purpose. Here's the reasons why. Okay, so then if that's coming, now you're getting to two things. Let's get to the third. So it doesn't change so that principle doesn't change when you're running a team. We're going to do a NutriZone regroup, okay? So you can point out, do you have to move their feet? Do you have to have their head up? Centerman has to come nice and low, deep and wide. Wingers don't get too low, don't get too high. Get your sticks up the ice. It's got to be crisp. We got to call for pucks. Well, there's 20 instructions. So let's do it with one or two instructions, right? D, move your feet. Winger, get nice and low. Let's get up the ice quick. So if you don't do it that way, then you're going to constantly correct it. It's just going to be overkill. You never get the drill done. So look at it. Let them fail a little bit. And then it's one step or two steps at a time. And that you just build on success. And the next thing you know, maybe it's 5 minutes, maybe it's one practice, maybe it's 2 weeks, that issue is clicking well. But you have to praise a little bit and then give feedback and correct.
Yeah. I love that you said as the coach, you know they're going to do it wrong. Like, you know that, right?
They can't do it perfect.
Yeah. So it's like, you know that going in. So that's why it's like you're setting up a strategy that is effective.
I'm not even saying wrong. I'm saying not perfect.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, because people want perfect.
Yes. So when you're in that role too, this is where you can kind of start to figure out how to work the individual now. So to your point, it's like, okay, let's say they did one thing right, two things wrong. Maybe this particular kid, you have to give them the compliment, then leave them alone for 10 minutes and then come back to it after. And they respond to that. Maybe there's another kid where they need you to finish on the compliment. So you can give them the two corrections and then finish on the compliment. Or there's another kid where it's like you hit them with the compliment first, they'll open up, and then you hit them with the correction right away. And this is where you have to learn to work the individual player or individual person too, right? So that's great. The other part maybe like on a, from a less technical level, if it's not a skill thing, like maybe you're coaching a younger team or whatever. Because I remember this with coaches. I remember even with my parents, it's like, you want to default to giving the life lesson. You know, you want to say, you know, you do this so that like, cause we talk about that all the time. You want to teach them the principles of life and whatever. And it's like, yes, but not everything is a moment to give a life lesson. Like sometimes just let it go, man. You know,
well, that's what we call pick your battles.
Yes.
People that, as you're becoming married, more or less.
Yeah, more or less.
as you spend time in marriage, as you spend time owning a business and wanting perfection, as you raise kids, as you coach kids, what you have to find is that there's time to pick battles. Because if you don't pick and choose your battles, you'll do nothing but fighting, right? So you raise a kid, it's like there's got to be a little leeway in certain things, right? Like if you got a kid, take my kid for example, like I don't know if he ever owned a notebook.
Yeah.
Just saying. Not that I gave a rip.
Yeah.
But my wife did. So there's one battle. Like one, okay, there's a triangle of a battle. Okay. You don't care about school. I don't give a rip about your school. Your mom cares about your school. Your mom right now is against me and against you. Your mom, if you don't start doing your schoolwork a little bit to show that you give a little bit of rip about what she's saying, like you just pretend, bring a pen once, then your mom doesn't talk to me about how you don't give a shit and that I need to support you. So if you would just bring a pen to school and get a 51 with just a little bit of effort, mom will say, well, at least he's trying, and I don't have to be in a battle with your mom about how I should care about your school. And now a lot of people say, well, you should care about school. Like, maybe I shouldn't, but I don't. I never did. Right? So now the next battle would be, where was I going with this? So now it's like, let's say you did get a 60 and you did a little bit of homework, and mom now says, good for you. You see what happens. You put a little effort. And then I look at you and I go, thanks for saving my ass. Now I don't have to argue with your mom about your school. And now mom's got to pick a battle. Should you get an 80? Well, what battle do you want him to be Einstein? Like, so that goes back to that. I don't care. I have the ability, right? I have the ability. You've taught it and all that stuff, but I just don't care. So like, we've made some points. So how much of a battle are we going to make this between the three of us, right? So we could do that in anything. We do that with hockey. You know, the kid is not a really good forechecker, and all of a sudden you got him to move a little bit. It's like, good. Now let's just continue to work on it, right? So it's like picking battles is freaking huge.
Yeah, and this is the biggest mistake. Like if I could throw some criticism at just maybe teachers in general, not everybody obviously, but just as a general statement, which does not apply to everyone, one of the biggest mistakes I see with, because I deal with a lot of teachers, like school teachers, is like every little thing is I yell at them, I give them shit, I stop the class, every little thing. And not only like do the kids not respond, because to your point, what you said at the start, it's like the more you speak, the less they listen. So not only is that ineffective, like how frustrating for you, man. Like every 5 minutes, like you have to stop and say something. Like you're going to hate your life, man. You're going to hate your job. You're going to hate the kids. So going into it with a little bit of knowledge, like they are kids. They are going to mess things up. They are going to not do things perfect. They're going to need reminding 100 times. They're going to need a million different things all the time. And the odd time when it's too much and you have to crack the whip a little bit, now it's more effective. You know, like you said, you're picking the battle. It's like, okay, we need to address this, you know, but if the kids, like I say, when the kids come in the gym, of course they want to jump on stuff. Of course they want to pull the cables. Of course they want to try to do a pull up. They want to hit the heavy bag right here. Like, of course they want to do those things. So as long as they're not doing something dangerous or being stupid, it's like you let them do their thing, you know? And then when it gets over the line, then you can pull them in a little bit, but you have to be able to pick the spot, and not everything is a moment to stop and give them, you know, read them the monologue that you have for the day, you know? So you have to have a little bit of let it go kind of thing, you know? So I think from like the player perspective, like, so there's, I gave you guys a few things to think about on your end, like that you can see or you can judge, or you can ask yourself the question about. But then another way of thinking about it is, how does it manifest in the actual player? Like, how can you tell maybe you're overcoaching an individual? So same thing, I'm just going to read them out and you can kind of ask or talk about it after I'm done. So some of like the negative consequences now of coaching. So it's like what you'll see in a kid could be like burnout, could be a kid is like stressed out or really anxious being at practice, or their parents tell you that they are getting hurt. That kind of goes more with the overtraining thing if you're doing that too much. Kids that don't want to be creative, like they feel like they have to be in the lines all the time. Decline in motivation, like maybe kids express they don't want to play anymore. I've had kids that are in some of these classes I train that have said that before. They just think negatively about themselves, like the I can't do anything right, a little bit of the pity party, what was me kind of stuff. Strained relationships, that's a good one, where it's like between you and the player, between you and the parents, those kinds of things. Early specialization, which is always a tricky thing that is kind of a hot topic, but you know, you're forcing kids to be a certain thing early and you're not giving them that leeway to have some autonomy. Kids that are not enjoying what they're doing, stunted development, their skills end up being limited, and then maybe even like a long, like impact long term of the impact you've had. Cause everybody can tell the story of like the shitty coach that was like, I can't say, well, you gave a few examples in a few episodes of like, you asked a player about this guy they had as a coach and they're like, I don't even want to talk about it. Like, I don't even want, you know, and that's the effect that you can have. And it doesn't have to be that you were, you know, a criminal coach. It could just be that you did these things. Like, you were just over coaching. You're just in their face too much. You're not adequately getting them to respond or working the individual player the way they need it, right? So those are kinds of some things that you can look for. So same thing, you can say any thoughts on that, or kind of talking about maybe the importance of letting the kids have some autonomy within the structure of coaching.
Well, you have to, right? Like, so the one thing I wanted to say though was because you were talking about the negatives, and I never want to come across like, coaches have to do it one way and poor players, because that's kind of like the society we live in now. If you're ever hard on someone, or if you ever...
For sure.
Right.
Yeah,
so I want to make sure this is very clear, that a lot of people, I've seen this so many times from coming from parents and players, that when a coach teaches them, and you've had this experience with some of our players, is that when you teach them something, it's called coaching. It's actually called coaching. So every time you do something as a player, it's not necessarily like, wow, you're the best player ever, or you don't praise them. Like, you're supposed to do certain things. And if, like, for example, if you're a goal scorer and you got 3 goals that game, the coach doesn't have to come up to you and say, you did a great job today. You got 3 goals today. That's awesome. You're the best, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's what you're supposed to do. So a lot of times, I mean, you could always praise. There's nothing wrong with it. But a lot of times, that would be over-coaching if you're over-positive and it's always like, that was good, that was good, that was good. It's like, okay, I'm tuning you out again, right? But what players and parents have to understand is, because someone may appear negative or they're pointing out your flaws, that doesn't mean that they're negative. That just could simply mean that they're coaching you, right? I need you to hang back a little bit. Every time you move the puck, you're like the fourth forward at the net. Like, I don't want you to do that. Coach doesn't want me to skate up the ice, Dad. Dad goes, why don't you let him skate up the ice? He's always so negative. It's like, no, I'm trying to make you a better player, or this is our system. So don't confuse negative or positive with, like, that's proper coaching. Like, you got to understand that coaching is coaching.
Dude, okay, so yes, like, this is, you have, like, just in general, because a lot of times I just talk, like, assuming there's a few things we can take for granted. I'm going to assume that you're going to have a brain about what I'm saying, right? So if I say that, a kid is really stressed and anxious around you, it's like, it could just be the kid. Like, it could be their environment at home. I'm not saying that this is because of you, you're doing this. It's just like, these are the questions to ask, and you can weigh the factors, obviously, right? So it's important to know, like, and this is for parents too, that are maybe sympathizing with my negatives that I just listed. It's like, coaching is a form of criticism or judgment. Like, the coach's job is to judge your kid's performance or criticize their performance, right? You can interpret that as negative if you wish, but that is the job. So me giving you something to work on is a form of criticism, or me saying you're not doing this well is my judgment of you. Like, that is the job. So exactly to your point, it's like, this is in no way saying that as the coach, you have to cater to every little thing that the player wants, or every little, that's how so to your point, the society is today, where it's like, you cater to the kids for everything, apparently. It's like no one in the right mind thinks that that's a good idea, you know? So as a coach, it's no different. It's like these are just some things you can think about that maybe is an indicator that you're doing a poor job in a certain area or with a certain individual, but that doesn't mean for sure that because of your coaching style, you're causing this kid to have burnout. That doesn't mean that at all, obviously, right? You're only with them a few hours a week at most, probably, right? So that's a good clarification.
Yeah. And so, and then like from the players, it's just understand you're getting coached and, you know, like sometimes, you know, as a coach, it's just like, it's not, I would assume it's not rocket science, but it's like, it's okay to kick the garbage can once in a while. Cause you're so like, especially if it's an effort thing or, you know, like you actually get passionate about the kids not performing or not becoming everything they can. Like every now and then it's good. Every day is not. Cause we got to understand like, the NHL, people make mistakes. Can you believe that in the NHL? No. I mean, I'm not even trying to be funny, man. In the NHL, guys gets paid 8, 10, 4 million, whatever it is, and the coach rips him for not tracking, like back-checking hard, or being lazy in his offensive zone, or not following a route, or having a turnover. It's because there's a lot of mistakes in the game, right? So mistakes happen, and at that point, I mean, you just don't play. But when you're a kid, it's like you're going to make mistakes. That's the thing. So as a coach, when you're watching kids make mistakes, you just can't do everything. You gotta. That's why I always come. For me, it works for me is always in themes, right? Pick your battles. What are the themes that you're looking for, right? I want, you know, all three zones a certain way. With effort, and there's going to be mistakes, and you can't just not every little thing can be a problem.
Okay, so I kind of want to go, kind of like applying it to different ages now. So I kind of had a thought. Actually, this is from what you said to me last night because you're on the ice with a group last night. I think they're U13, U4,
yeah, U13. They're great.
So you love it. So one of the comments you made just last night, actually, it's funny how this actually plays perfectly into where I was going. You were saying how. It's like a nice age because they're excited about listening. Like they're excited about like trying to get better and do things at that age. So I'll let you talk more about that in a second, but I kind of want to lay out like a thought I had and then you can kind of tell me what you think. So in terms of like the overcoaching strategy or coaching effectively, not overcoaching, coaching effectively per age group. So I kind of wrote down like the different demographics. Like let's say we have like a U9, then we'll have like a U13, a U20, and then a professional. So that'd be like under 40 or something, right? So at the U9 level, my philosophy is like the less is more kind of thing because they just want to have fun. Like they'll take a couple teaching points, but mostly they just want to have fun. So your overcoaching is going to be too much instruction at that point, okay? As you go up to that U13 age group now, this is where maybe like a little bit like more is more. Because they can actually get excited about being serious and they all think they're going to be NHL players and all these kinds of things. And you can kind of capitalize that and maybe give them a little bit more. As you get up to U20, to me, it goes back to less is more again, because after kids are like 15, 16, 17, like listening becomes less cool and teenagers think they know a lot more than they know. And you kind of have to play into that again. So one example I had, I was talking with one of the teams and their coach was mentioning how they don't do a team warm up together. And this is a junior team. So I'm like, okay. He wanted me to talk to them about it. And I'm like, okay, how do I do this? Because if I have a 20-year-old kid that doesn't like to do warm ups, like what am I going to say? Right. So I kind of said to them, I said, okay, so it would be good if you guys started doing a team warm up together. I know some of you guys like doing warm ups more than others. Like in my opinion, doing a good warm-up will be better for you, but everybody has their own thing. So at the very least, do something as a team together for no other reason than just like optically, you're doing something as a team, your coach will be happy about it, and it'll kind of get you a little bit checked in even without you feeling that, right? As opposed to me saying, if you don't do a warm-up, your game's going to be horrible, and if you don't do this, then this is going to happen, and your coach is going to be pissed and whatever, and going that too much explaining about why they're so wrong way would be ineffective for that age group. So that less is more kind of becomes more of a thing at U20. And it's like, it's not their job yet. Like they're not professionals, right? And then that's where like you get over U20. Now it's more like as professionals, their job is to listen to you. If they don't listen to you, they're gone. So it's kind of like a little bit of an arc of like less is more, more is more, less is more, more is more. Yeah. Is that kind of,
yeah,
think
well,
of that?
But that goes back to like a couple of things we said earlier. Pick your battles. Okay. So that would be warm up. It's not, it's important to me. It's important to you, but goes back to, so pick your battles. Is that something that I want to battle with my kids?
Die on that hill. Yeah.
Maybe I should leave that to my leadership group, and the leadership group can kind of, push on that one a little bit or talk about it. That would probably be better, right? That's a smaller detail that would be good for your team. And that's something that you can impose on your leadership group or your leaders of your room or, right?
Which is what I did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, but that, it also goes back to our three things. Does everybody have the ability to warm up? Yes. There's not one person playing elite hockey that doesn't know how to, you know, do a high knee and a, you know, all those different things. Do they understand that what they're doing? Yes. It's the give a shit meter. Do I give a shit? So you could push about a warm up with someone, and you're just going to have a frustrating conversation if they don't want to warm up. Now, a different thing to maybe push on would be is they don't back check, they don't forecheck hard, they don't follow the system. That's where you spend your time coaching or harping on it, where you spend your time speaking to them or giving it to them, to the point where, you know, as they're older to a certain level or certain levels, you talk to them to the point where if they don't, then they just don't get to play, or you don't get to make money, or you don't have a scholarship and all those different things. So that's where your biggest words are. Is you get to play or not.
So do you kind of agree with that kind of by age? Like if I said U9, U13, U20, U40, that kind of wave of,
yeah,
coat?
Does, I think more so.
Like as a general,
yeah,
thing?
I think so. Like if I'm going to put my view on it, it would be like once you get to like there's, I think you're right. 12 and under-ish is you're talking to kids, you're teaching to kids that want to have fun. They want to do their own thing. They want to try the Michigan. They want to, you know, do the cool things. They don't understand the concept of a team in general. The if you get a kid or two that actually does care about the team, which that happens, but they want to have individual success, but they want to have fun. They don't really care about the details of the game. So less is more. So what you're imposing on them is more of a fun environment and a hardworking environment. Teaching them, like that's a principle that I'll never back off of, is that if they're working hard, whatever that means to you, but effort is number one. If they're not willing to work hard, that could be always something that you're coaching. And then fun with some details. Once you get to that 13, let's say 13 to 16, like up to junior, now you're taking, I think that it's important that the kids understand the game, that there's some consequences, that the team, all those different things. Then you're teaching a little bit more, oh, this is a forecheck Y, this is a F3 Y, this is a D zone. You know, it makes more sense to them now because they have the ability to actually pass the puck tape to tape and shoot, you know.
And they're excited about it.
Yeah.
They're into
it.
They care.
Yeah,
right?
Especially if you present it like, you know, we're don't have the ability, but we're going to outwork them, we're going to do this, and we're going to try to, you know, the concepts are there. So, and then when you get to major junior college, I mean, you're doing a lot of teaching, but it's more on point. Do this or else you don't play.
Yeah.
Do this or you don't play. Like, you know, it could be a furry eyeball that gets, it's no words, just a furry eyeball to somebody.
Yeah.
Right? So I would agree for the most part with what you're saying.
Cool.
We could debate here and there, but
So I think that that kind of wraps like most of the things I wanted to talk about. I think we kind of hit everything that I was thinking. Is there anything you want to add, like on the, I don't know, overcoaching or like best ways to get kids to respond or something?
Yeah, I'm just gonna say this. I guess is I had a conversation with I'll just say Dale. Hey, Dale.
Hey, Dale. How
you doing, this Dale? Morning, because he's a coach. And what I like about this is it could sound like I'm talking about Dale where I shouldn't be, but I'm saying this in a good way. Called me this morning and he said, as a professional coach, he said, Andy, we won the other night. Had three guys pouting. And pissed me off. So I went in my room. And then I went in the room and I said this, this, and this, like as a group. He goes, like, I'm thinking about what should I have done? So my point of saying that part is and this is what the advice I would give to coaches is like, if you're not sure, check with someone, right? Am I doing too much here?
No. Yeah. That's,
am I doing too much?
Yeah.
Like, you know, cause I got a brain and I could give them an idea. So I listened to it and I said, I think what you did is okay. He goes, but then are they not allowed to get upset after a game? Even though we won? I said, well, that's the issue, right? So this would be like picking the battles thing. Is do you address the fact that maybe someone's pissed off that they didn't have a good game, even though you won? You know, someone would be throwing his shit and just like they're pissed at themselves. Are they pissed at ice time? That's okay. It's okay to be upset. Like right? So it's like that's a battle where maybe it's an individual coaching and maybe not. I don't know the necessary answer, but it's good to check in. And it's like, is that the battle you want to pick on? Yeah. And then, but what I liked about that is that he thought about it and said, like, what do you think of this? So that am I just again playing pool with a rope? Am I going down a road that I don't need to go to? Am I just saying something and they just, now I got a pissed off guy. Now they might be even more pissed off. Or do I have a kid that goes, oh, okay, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. But like either way, kids have emotions. Players, these aren't kids. They're late teens, right? Playing junior hockey. And are they okay? Like, is it good to be upset that you didn't perform or you didn't get a chance at something? It's actually kind of good. If it brings the whole team down, sometimes it happens, but try not to. But it's, so anyways, my point is, if you're a little confused or if you're not sure of your actions or you're talking to it, like maybe bounce it off of someone like Dale did with me.
Dude, that's such a great point. And kudos to Dale too, who has a great mustache. he approaches coaching with such humility like that, knowing that he is not the perfect coach. He's not the perfect person, which in turn makes him a very, very good coach. And a very, very good person, because he's willing to say, I did this, but I'm not sure. Or I'm thinking of doing this, I'm not sure. And then bouncing it off some other people that he thinks there, he respects their opinion, right? And I think that can be a really hard thing to do as a coach, because you're supposed to be the chief. Like, you're supposed to be the guy that has the answers. And whether it's you're asking a, you know, an assistant coach that maybe they know less than you, but they're a human. And they can tell whether or not something might be effective or not. And they're in the room with the guys just like you. And it could be that person. It could be someone who's just familiar with coaching. It could be whoever that, it could be your wife. It could be whoever. Just get an opinion on, you know, what you think the consequence could be of your behavior as a coach. And that's such a great, great point to finish on, because I think that can be really, really difficult to do as a coach, is just be like, I'm really not sure. And it's, I guess that'll be my finish. It's like, if you're not for you, it's like, if you're not sure, ask. For me, it's like, if you're not sure, it's okay to be not sure. Like, you're learning just like everybody else, right? Even though you're the one that's supposed to be the
boss. Well, look at Mike Babcock this year.
Yeah, no kidding, man.
That's overcoaching.
Yeah, no shit.
Right? There's lines, right? And I'm not carving the guy. He's a better coach than I ever will be.
Yeah.
But there's certain lines where you lose your guys.
Yeah.
Right? You lose your players. And it's like, if, I guess the answer to that would be, almost like, if you don't have anything good to say, don't say it at all. Or if you're not sure, don't say it.
Mm.
Right? If you're not sure, or if you
yeah,
or
sit
you
on
read
it, man.
You read something that you look into and you go, like, kids seem a little lost or whatever. You can read things, and then maybe you just got to reevaluate, talk it out to someone or whatever. But that's why I think sometimes less is more, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but cool. You have to have something.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, you are the coach at the end of the day. Cool. Okay. I think that's good. We'll leave it there for next week.
All right.
Okay. Goodbye.